Okay, let's go on to the Russian Phobos grunt.
And we have a number of other things obviously happening in terms of Phobos as well. The Russian Phobos grunt in 2012 as well is going to be...
Oh my gosh, yes. And yeah. And notice the timing. Well, the Phobos grunt mission, which is a follow-on to the former Soviet Union's 1989 mission, two missions to Phobos, called Phobos 1 and 2, very imaginatively. Back then, the Russians in 88 had launched two unmanned robots to not go to Mars, but to go to Phobos, orbiting, you know, less than 4,000 miles above the surface. And one mission failed en route for reasons that we don't really understand. But the second mission, Phobos 2, made it to Mars, made it into orbit, and actually made it within, a couple of hundred kilometers of Phobos before it also mysteriously died. Well, before it did, it radioed back information, telemetering is what it's called, and this information appeared in actual peer-reviewed scientific papers in some of the most prestigious scientific journals in the world, like Nature. And in those papers, in 1989, the Soviet Union claimed, based on its insight in situ observations with Phobos 2, that they had discovered that Phobos, the inner moon of Mars, is one-third hollow. Furthermore, they detected a wake in the solar wind behind Phobos as it interacted with both the solar wind and the Martian atmosphere. And they concluded from that data, which again is in peer-reviewed papers published in Nature in 1989, that Phobos is leaking some kind of fluid, probably water, which is interacting with the solar wind and producing anomalous plasma and magnetic readings.
Wait a minute. Is Phobos one-third hollow?
No.
Okay, then you want to respond to...
Yeah, here we go. The reason they done tore off for Mars is because there ain't enough light years to live long enough to get there, to be able to get there and get back, number one. And especially in the 80s, they didn't have a ship that could get there, number one. And it would still be on its journey now if you're gonna have time and you're going to have the speed of light and you're going to have... no warp drives and no portals or wormholes to slip through. The problem is that you can't get there from now. It's too far away.
And people are waiting, expecting that NASA or somebody will come up with some technology that will make it less time.
Oh, but they've already got it back, printed the paper, made it hysterical, so therefore using it as a reference to tell that it's now hollow. And you can't. That's the whole problem with a Mars expedition.
What?
That's in your neighborhood. But that you can't get there. It's many, 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 many light years away.
Yeah, and the technology they would use to get there is based on measurements of time and the false premise of time. So because they work with the false premise, they're never going to be able to make stuff that goes that fast. Because
and if they did make it, let's say they're human creators and they're marvelous and they do, they've already invented a really great shortwave radio that can send radio waves back from a moon and Mars and pick it up right here.
Well, that's McCone's point. We travel better through electricity rather than, radio rather than going in a tin can.
Apparently so. Maybe they did two cans and put a string between it so they could have live communication.
Right, but your point is that we can pick up through shortwave radio a form of knowing about Phobos.
Okay.
That's what you're saying? We can know...
That's why he's saying that they sent radio transmissions back regarding every detail, that there was clouds and spewing water out of the moon...
Right, so we get that information about Phobos, and we did it without getting on a boat that would take unlimited numbers of centuries to get it there. So,
although they already shipped something that gave this eyewitness report, and they radioed it back. Well, it's improbable, Bob. You can't.
What's improbable? Radioing it back?
They send a radio transmission back from the moon to Mars.
Okay, start over again. I think you just start off this little part saying shortwave radio or something got to Mars.
That's what they said. They said Russia sent two. One didn't make it. The other one sent radio transmissions back to Russia. And they put it in all the important papers. And give every detail regarding Phobos and what it was like and how they cleaned their windows on the spaceship of Phobos.
Okay, they did.
We're
that.
Saying if they left in the 80s, it still wouldn't be there yet.
You're saying they did not successfully do it through radio transmission?
No, Bob, radios don't work that far out.
So it's not true what the Nature Main prestigious journal talked about.
Well, exactly. And if they left, then... they wouldn't be there yet.
So are you saying that? Okay, you're saying that those articles are as bull. Not true.
For now, if you're going to have time, which they do, and you're going to have the speed of light, which they do. Now we don't, but they do. And if they have all that, and those are the predicates that you're going to use to build this structure, they would not have arrived to Mars yet.
What do they mean by radio transmissions that they claim are picking up some observations?
That the ship shot from Russia went to Phobos. Someone.
Well, that's a tin can. That's what I mean. A tin can went out there. My metaphor. Go ahead. And what happened?
Whoever's in the tin can looked, and they got on their shortwave, and they called Russia, collect from Mars. And said, hey, y'all need to get this in all the big reviews. This is the biggest secret ever. So make sure it's in the Sunday paper.
Yeah, so it's interesting, Ed, that they this prestigious journal printed a lie. Or did they not know? Or did they believe the Russians or something?
Well, it's not about even belief, you see. It's about doing the math in your own world. They know how fast a spaceship can go.
Right. And you're saying...
they know how far away Mars is from here.
And you're saying the spaceship didn't get to Mars.
Well, it wouldn't have to... it may, but it wouldn't have time yet. When you talk about a light year, that's a long way.
Okay, did those Voyager ships go out there and get near Saturn and take pictures? That happened?
Oh, he said no.
Ah, well, now we get some interesting... now there's a real cover-up. So NASA is making it up. It's interesting.
Well, they may. When they get there, they very well may.
But they haven't yet, and they're claiming they have done it.
What are you talking about? You're talking about in the 80s. In the 80s.
Okay.
They're still using hydrogen as a fuel source.
Okay. Where are they using that fuel source?
To get off the planet.
Okay. So you're saying that all the wonderful images that Voyager came up with were bogus.
They were created.
So the real scandal is there's no NASA. There's just a studio down in Houston that pumps out these images and claims there's all these scientists employed tin cans
well,
to find
maybe they will when they find time, because see, they're still judged by time.
Yeah, but you're getting metaphysical again and nebulous. I mean, drop the premise. Drop the premise of time and all that stuff and just look at it.
You can't. When that's what they're using to sustain.
No, yeah, I'm saying that's what I'm saying. Drop your objection to them using time. They are saying... that they sent out tin can and got pictures, and you're saying the tin can could not have gotten there, therefore those pictures that they put on their NASA website, wonderful achievements of the probes they've sent out, the tin can probes, are not true.
Can't be. Yeah.
Ooh. Well, what do you think of that, Ed? Isn't that an exclusive?
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Where did they create these images? How did they do that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's easy. Have you ever seen computer graphics?
Mm-hmm.
Were they using computer graphics in the 70s before people knew of it? Yeah, they'd had it ahead of time. And how? Now, there's where you get the real secret. How come the Project Paperclip brought over these advanced technologies and are being used ahead of what people think is the time schedule of Mr. Philip Corso through back engineering from... So then the
Montgomery, Alabama, yeah.
Philip Corso, I think that was his name. So the alien contact line back engineer, and really all it was the cargo called from Nazi Germany, brought over to the Pentagon.
Take the information now. Now, we're not talking about now. You know a lot of things now. But now go back to the 80s and talk about you couldn't even get a real good FM station radio wave to work in a big geographic area, okay? This was just the beginning of satellite worlds and that kind of stuff. Now they're talking about receiving a radio frequency from Mars back to here. It's like the movie with Jodie Foster, The First Contact, that they were giving the signal back, and it was the old honeymooners, and Adolf Hitler was the imagery because it had been so long out, it took that long for the signal to get there.
Yeah.
And that's with a super pooper snooper gooper deal. See, if you're going to go at it from that way, just from the premise of where they are, if you have time, which you're saying ignore, okay, we're for that, but they can't because they're judged by it. So the answer to the obvious to what you're trying to get to here is you can't get there from now. Now, if they want to come back and say there is no time, there are portals, you can slip right through it, get there, slip right back. Here's the telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
We type the telegraph, send it through the portal, had a runner, run it to the mountain and bring it back, and here's where it has the chalk on it that stands that it's real and valid. You know it was their chalk that they used to mark it as true, their seal. Okay, fine. But that's not what they're saying. They're saying they went somewhere further than they've had time to get there yet and have been so good at it that they had a string and two tin cans that they sent a message back from a radio frequency. You can't even get a radio frequency from the backside of the moon. How are you going to get it from the backside of the moon of Mars?
Okay, fine. So you can see the role Richard Hogan, these whistleblowers, talking about a virtual reality created studio in Houston that the Houston would recommend and fund George Norrie's show of presenting people like Hogan because they distract people into thinking it was real, these achievements, and the real point is there is no NASA on that level.
They're blowing something up somebody's skirt, but we don't know if it's a whistle or not.
Right. Now, the book makes people try to match with external reality. But primitive.
But they drop the external, the relevance of the external reality because by their own definitions, it won't work from there. You can't get there from now.
Right. Now, I'm just talking about all this technology came out of the printing press as a background medium that people could match their sense of what is on there, and then they all joined in and did these inventions. And you're saying that the inventions that have come out of that around now, including NASA, are junk piles, and if you can take on the idea of not matching sense, but making sense, make up your own reality, you're free to make it up, you can travel anywhere and even beyond any maps that they have in the universe. So you're encouraging us to, it's so easy to topple this present civilization if we accept what Ion's doing and then experiencing it. Beg your pardon?
Just let go.
It didn't work.
If you could just let go, if you could just turn loose of the knot, you're down at the end of the rope and you're tied enough. If you could just let go, all is available. All knowing is available. Not thinking, knowing is available. But you can't go about rules and regulations and then validate the qualifiers that make the rules a regulation and the regulations the rule. You can't view it. You can't have it both ways. It is two conversations, but you can't get there from now. You've got to bring it back to a place where there are rules or there are not rules. And if there's not rules, okay, fine. Now we're getting somewhere. And if there are rules, then you will not usurp the rules that you have established within the labyrinth of your mind. You can't say that this is the speed of light and this planet is this many light years away and there ain't this many years to get to there till now that you're already getting radio frequencies back from it. you would have gotten there after the radio frequency would have had to been broadcast to get back to here. It would have to be at a time in the future to send the radio frequency back. When you look at the stars, that's silent pictures.
That's right. Okay, fine. We get that. So the thing is, if one resonates with Ion, you're every week on Cash Flow or on Ed's information farm blogspot. If you take this in, you can drop all the civilizations' artifacts around you. They're junk.
Use their definitions of how long does it take to take away 1 light year.
Yeah, drop their definitions is what you're saying.
Well, or use them, and then when you use their definitions, it doesn't work.
Okay, so this is where it'd be easy to topple the present technological civilization if you let go. If you let go.
That's exactly right. Add it up.
What'd you say about rules? I think if you what the rules?
If you go by their rules,
oh, yeah.
It doesn't work.
Okay, very good. So let's continue Russian Phobos Grunt,
which the Phobos 2 spacecraft dutifully picked up as it orbited Mars and crossed this wake. Think of, you know, kind of like a rock on a stream with the water flowing past it, and you've got a wake downstream. Well, the Phobos spacecraft detected the electronic signatures of something, water vapor, leaking out of Phobos. Well, if you're looking at a little rock less than 20 miles across that's billions of years old and has been there since the beginning of the solar system, in the relatively warm environment of a moon orbiting as close to the sun as Mars, which is 1.5 times as far from the sun as we are, there's really no plausible mechanism whereby water in an asteroid, let's say is ice under the surface, would have survived for those eons and still be leaking, escaping from Phobos. It's just not in the numbers. However, if Phobos is, as we now firmly believe based on the data that we've been analyzing from ESA, if Phobos is in fact an ancient spacecraft, a huge space station of some kind, a manufactured object which has been bashed and battered by meteor strikes on the exterior, but in fact has preserved areas on the interior, including rooms that actually are containing an environment, an atmosphere, as the leaks, pun intended, coming out of ESA that we wrote up on the Enterprise mission website in terms of our Phobos paper a few weeks ago, now tend to indicate, then it all comes together. And yes, the Russians, the Soviets back in 1989, merely detected another example of why Phobos is in fact not natural but is artificial, and it becomes part of the accumulating database, which will then be acknowledged officially, if my political projections are correct about the timetable, sometime this year, 2010, the year we make contact, because that would be the safe route to ultimately, probably in 2012, saying, oh, and by the way, guys, guess who's coming to dinner?
So he's making significance out of 2012. That's what he's leading up to. He thinks some kind of visitors are going to show up, and it'll finally be announced. That's all he's hoping for in 2012.
RSVP in the 90s, the 80s. And they would have had time to get the message and get dressed and get here by then. Is that what he's saying? Well, wait, no. They've already done Google Map of Phobos. They can tell you the inside, what it looks like, how clean the windows are. And it's interesting that you can take a spaceship and make a spaceship so big that it has its own atmosphere. That's pretty impressive.
Okay, but it doesn't matter from my point of view. It doesn't matter if Hull's right or not. He tries bizarre content, or just content from a Monday night show, or he comes back on Friday. He's providing words.
Then call it science fiction and let everybody enjoy it. That's fine. I mean,
if you want to get on a nebulous metaphysical level, you know, the word fiction comes from the word fascio, which is means to make, and fact comes from make. So fact and fiction both come from the same root of making, which is a making. Fiction is made, and facts are made.
Well, if that's the point of creation, wonderful. But it's not the hyperbole that you use to gauge how you're less than because other human creators have done it and won't let you in on it.
Okay, the next one. This is, I don't know, it's, we've discussed it, but there's more here. It says, Ed's title, Phobos is an ancient spaceship.
Phobos. Some have said, you know, obviously if you look at the articles that you guys have up on enterprisemission.com, you suggest that it's actually it's a spaceship, and that's outrageous. You know, we got to talk about
that. Why is it outrageous?
Well, the thing is here that I want to try to get to is...
Come on, Heinrich. Why is it outrageous? It's only outrageous because you've been told it can't happen.
It's, well, I mean, nothing is
what is it that J.B. Haldane, who was that famous British scientist, said some years ago back in the 1940s? He said the universe is not only stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine.
I believe that's
Why
true,
is it
yeah.
unbelievable, given all the amazing wonders that we've seen in the 20th and 21st century in space, why is it so unbelievable to entertain the idea that, in fact, the solar system might be filled with artificial objects that we just haven't been told about?
Right, and that may be true, that there's all kinds of things that would surprise us, but in the case of the Phobos, you're saying it ain't a spaceship.
No, if you have that degree of imagination, why can't you go there and see for yourself?
Right. What do you say? It may be beyond what we can imagine. Mm-hmm. Well, that's making the universe bigger than you, or making you feel less than. And
that's exactly. You're not smart enough to get the really big words.
Right, and you're not smart enough to engage your imagination. Or to engage imagination is less than realizing the universe is more than your imagination.
Correct. Yeah. But see, that's all based on the immature thought, the passing fancy, the thought that you haven't actually done a 3-2-1 process, because there's not one dynamic that he could go into that he couldn't validate and prove for himself. But instead, it was all in somebody else's business trying to vindicate and validate.
Yeah, he's all uptight because NASA hasn't validated what he could find out personally.
They sunk my battleship and didn't tell me.
Okay, carry on.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
If you separate the data from the official pronouncements, if you get it in your mind that you don't need permission to reach the conclusion based on the evidence itself, then you just look at the evidence, and the evidence is overwhelming. Yes, they've lied to us, and it's artificial.
Mm.
It's when you have to stop and get their permission to think the, quote, unthinkable, that you run into trouble. In many areas, not just in space science. I mean, this is kind of the watchword for how we shouldn't be living in the 21st century anyway, because too many officials lie to us routinely, because knowledge is power.
And that's what you're disagreeing with. This knowledge or any knowledge is not power.
Right. That's right. If you're talking about knowing, that there's no power in knowing.
Right.
Once you know, you know.
Power's not an issue.
Power's not an issue.
Okay, so let's hear more of his literal assumptions.
Power, and they want to keep knowledge of this caliber to themselves and not let the rest of us in on the secret. Well, the secret is not a secret because it's being revealed drip, drip, drip constantly in every data release. You just have to open your eyes, understand how science works, understand what you're seeing in these imagery, which is stunning, repetitive, regular, artificial geometry. I mean, Carl Sagan, who is probably our best-known ambassador in these realms, no longer with us, unfortunately, you know, told us all many, many years ago that on Earth, the first evidence of intelligence is revealed by the geometric regularity of its design.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you look at Phobos and you look at it on those images, there's no doubt in my mind, in any reasonable observer's mind, that there is stunning regular geometry. I come back to that. It's regular geometry, like blocks and streets and buildings on the surface of this tiny moon, which tells me it's not a moon at all. It's, in fact, an ancient derelict space station left by an ancient civilization. And again, if it was the only example we'd ever found in my 30 years of doing this, I'd say, okay, yeah, it's pretty far out. But Phobos is only the latest example of thousands upon thousands of examples of artificial geometry and technology and science that we've seen all over the solar system. So to me, it's kind of like all that has been foreplay, coming to the threshold, to the precipice, to the objective of letting us in on our real history And I'm betting that archaeologically it's going to begin later this year, probably in September, probably at the ESA meeting in Rome, which is going to discuss Phobos in great detail prior to the conveyance of the ESA data to the Russians at another meeting on Phobos to be held in October in Moscow. I think the end of this year is, in fact, the year when we are told officially Phobos might really be more interesting than we've been telling you, and we got to go with Phobos Grunt and find out. So 2010 then becomes the year we make contact.
Well, as I listen to that, Richard Hoagland is incredibly naive about so many things. This is silly. It really is what you said. Oh, they blew up my battleship.
So then we begin with the if so facto ramifications of thinking. This is A plus B equals C squared, so therefore C squared must be the issue. And C squared doesn't have anything to do with A or anything to do with B. But if you could let your imagination consider, why can't C squared equal A plus B? It's C squared, okay? See, we've given you the pictures. We haven't been able to have enough time to get there and get back. But we showed you the radio transmissions of where they sent it back. We looked through every corridor of this derelict artificial spaceship. Now, the one thing that we in non-physical would never suggest that human creators take on is riding in an artificial spaceship. Don't get a real one. Don't get an artificial one. Get a real spaceship if you're going to ride in one.
So it's an example of the disservice of the literacy that leads to all kinds of knots and paradoxes in his mind, and he's fighting was it Don Quixote, one of the first classics of the printing press? What a blow that phantom gave me. This guy is wrestling with phantoms. And would he take another 3 years to investigate what Ion said, that this is all made in a studio in Houston?
or at least come to the place of if you're going to play it from a time game, rectify the reality that you don't have enough time to figure out the proofs that you've already been given from your past. It's not going to make it have time to get to your future yet. But now, we want to be clear. There is now, just so you know, there is no such thing as no such thing.
Yeah, so he's talking about validating history and finding out our true history, and because he's too embedded in the literate effect, he wouldn't be able to comprehend the fact that there's no time, and that...
If you could get rid of time, then all these things that he's discussing actually has some basis. Oh, but Bob, don't you worry. Don't you worry. They're listening. And when they hear it, they'll clean up their story and get it all straightened out, make all the lines and spaces fit, and esoterically let it flip, fly, and slope into this thing. And we really don't want to confuse Ed because he's doing a great job. And if we give some of those bills of particular that you were asking about before, that'd be the new thing that they'd have to talk about on the coast to coast and toast to toast.
Yeah, so we're not giving out stuff because we'll let George Norton them run out of topics so that people listen to our show. We'll tell the stuff. Why give it out?
We don't mind. But you see what's happening now is as it seems things get cleaned up, they go, yeah, what about that? Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, how did they get the report from a radio transmission from Mars? And what kind of camera did they use in the 80s to take photographs that could tell what the inside of the planet looked like?
Okay, Ian.
Like a derelict spaceship, that's it.
Yeah, you like to say there's no time, and we should add to that, there is no history, and there are books, and you can read stories, but how that book relates to what you can do with your own potentiality is ridiculous. It's a limiting factor.
That's correct. And history can't be that significant. If it were, why do you keep changing?
Okay, so we might be able to, I don't know where these will lead, because he's got here now, following along the assumption that it was an artificial, a real spaceship. Maybe we don't want to get trapped too much in the artificial, but an ancient spaceship. He's now going to discuss who built it. Yeah, it really gets himself into a rabbit hole.
And probably has plans, the blueprints from the ancient.
Yeah.
The beginning of the solar system. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he'll probably find it in the Emerald Tablets. Okay, here it goes.
How is you know, our ancient past connected with what is out there in the solar system? Is that our old technology out there that you're talking about, or is there someone else's technology there?
Well, bottom line, we don't know, because we don't have ground truth. Now, I'm pretty sure that the officialdom, you know, the space agencies of the world, the Russians, the Indians, the Chinese, the Americans, Europeans, I bet those guys know. We on the outside don't know, because we have to make inferences based on the data that we're looking at. But going back to the most striking piece of anomalous data, which began me on this investigation, you know, almost 30 years ago now, the so-called face on Mars, I would say we're probably dealing with ourselves. We're probably dealing with an ancient aspect of the human race, which is so much older and so much more amazing than we have been allowed to believe. And the fairy tales were told about Sumer that...
He's actually starting to broaden his mind, to ask people to broaden what history books told them. But we might discover new amazing facts, but we're still relying on someone telling us that fact, and we're still basing our imagination, limiting it to facts that someone presents to us as the correct fact.
And if it's that important, it's that ancient, it's that advanced, why wouldn't they leave some dynamics in their future from their now past that would give you inferences that would be on a broader scale, so that some of these little belief things that you're going to have to assume don't longer have to make an ass out of you and me?
You were just referring about the future dropping things in the past to validate our now?
Well, they're so ancient and they're so wonderful. If the real smart ones a long time ago couldn't figure it out, what chance you got?
Good point. Well, maybe they did. He's saying they did figure it out and made these marvelous spaceships. But
they're derelict and trapped in the orbital confines making atmosphere on Mars.
Very good. Okay.
You know, Earth civilization only began 6,000 years ago. In fact, is just a fairy tale. That we're millions of years old, and that we haven't been allowed to see our real history and know who we really are, because of whatever political rationale in the minds of governments, they have reached the conclusion that we're not ready, that knowledge is not for the profane. There's also a really important religious element to all this, because when you begin looking at secret societies, when you begin looking at the mystery schools which have handled this kind of discussion for millennia, you find that those people are infiltrated again and again through and through all the space agencies of the world. So in essence, we are being allowed by a priesthood access to information that they have known and encoded in sacred texts going back thousands of years. Again, I refer you to the Vedas.
Hmm. Now, that's pretty accurate. That there are priests who can travel to other worlds, and Ionis talked about the parallel worlders who oversee the project at the Hadron Collider. So what he was just saying, that there are these entities, people who know about using their imagination to make sense, and then match with sense, to make it up, make sense, make new worlds, experience new worlds with their chemical body. That is true of part of the game that came over in Project Paperclip.
Yes.
But he thinks that he would have to go and get accepted by these inner elites.
Permission.
Yeah,
get permission. Have the knowing if he could see it. Yeah.
And we're telling him all he needs is a private reading with Ion.
Just listen to what he's actually saying, to the point that he can start using the same rules and the regulations that he's gauging his less than place on, and coming to this. The better way to come out of that conversation, if you listen to him a little bit, is like, enough of talking about this business. How do we convince those really smart ones, smarter than us? They didn't do real good with it, but they screwed it up, and they're derelict, and they're gone. We came from them. We don't know how we came from them, because there ain't enough time, because we're billions of years old, but we don't know it, so we can't figure it from there. So then, if that's the case, there was a great deal of separation at some point from the marvelous human creators in their power to the point that humans, and if you want to start your stopwatch to see when that was, good luck with that, where you separated yourself from your power and put a veil between you and you. Because that's what we're talking about more than we are about this particular little play of words, a word play.
Yeah.
From that place, if you can get beyond that, and all these things that he's discussing could be actually relevant if a human creator will engage it. But from this less than, because they won't let me know, and I can't know nothing, and I ain't good enough for nothing, and they even that knew it or weren't good enough to sustain it. And then they made memos, so if we could just get our hands on them memos, that's job and all. Secrets to everything. Now, the priest had it, but they ran for the GOP, the gubernatorial, can't even say it, why would you want to do it, the gubernatorial residency for C-SPAN's version of what the political regime is going to allow you to know or not, and they don't even know themselves.
So,
I mean, you know, it's pretty hard to serve an oligarchy that doesn't stay in office long.
Yeah, that's one of the main points, winning or unwinning of the TV series 24. You just see an endless parade of pompous bureaucrats who have all this power for about 20 minutes, then they're off, and then another guy comes in and he's off, and just a parade of oligarchy bureaucrats who have very short job length. You notice that in that TV show?
That are holding up. Now, all these people that are out of politics, they have all these secrets, but they don't discuss them. They know everything, and they can't make you know. They don't tell their children or their mistresses, and then they stroll their semen from the four corners of the earth and get a YouTube and start getting everybody can see it. But all these tactile, mysterious, eluding secrets don't get passed down. They get moved out somewhere. So if there's any impeachment, that means that they have to turn in their key card that lets them in on all the really good secrets that they know, and have written documents regarding and published to indicate and validate this thing that they think they might have the consideration regarding.
Yeah, all that's nonsense, so come on in, and I will tell you how to get started on your real space vehicle.
Yeah. We think you ought to do some of the interviewing, Bob. That ought to be really interesting. A lot of the stuff they're letting slide down their throat holes, down their neck tubes, you wouldn't have it for 1 second, because it's kind of like, not only no, but hell no. First of all, who is this damn we? Who is this we that everything hid? Who are they? And when did they get into power? And how did they take over your very beingness to not let you have coffee but one drop at a time? You know, and a double espresso is all right. At least it's got a little kick to it. But if you have to drink it by the drop, it's not so pleasant.
Right, and I would not want to waste my time interviewing these guys.
And that's right.
Next point. How many objects that are said to be natural are actually spacecraft? So he's going to develop this even more.
What I did in the piece in the Phobos paper was to compare bashed and battered Phobos morphologically. You know, if you get the right pictures, you get a three-dimensional kind of idea of what this thing looks like in terms of its shape. And then I realized that there was a stunning similarity to another so-called asteroid-like object, which was encountered just last year by the ESA spacecraft Rosetta, which is on its way to visit and probe an asteroid, you know, when it gets in the right celestial configuration. But in terms of getting there, they had to pass a couple of other asteroids, and when they encountered one of those a few months ago, we have the data on the Enterprise website that, in fact, it also does not appear to be a natural object. It appears to be about a 3-mile diameter craft, a ship, battered and bashed, but whose geometry is in much better shape than Phobos. And I made the comparison in the piece that these appear to be part of, if you want to use the term, maybe an ancient fleet. I mean, in space, there's nothing that says you got to be streamlined.
Sure.
There's nothing that says you got to have a pointed nose. You know, you can build a spacecraft in any shape you want because in a vacuum, there's no air resistance. So if you move through a vacuum, even in a cube, you know, going to the Borg, going to my friend Gene Roddenberry and his projections, I mean, the idea of spaceships, or which, by the way, are two double tetrahedra, back to back in a cubical form.
Do you agree with that, that spaceships are double tetrahedra back in a cubical form or something like that?
It's all looking for a reason.
Right. So he cited your buddy Gene Roddenberry. He claimed to be a friend and inspired by him. Well, yes, he was inspired by him. So Mike was inspired. So you almost, in the pantheon of NASA-related topics, you have to acknowledge Gene Roddenberry. But that was a long time ago. What would we be inspired by today?
Right.
Is there any movies or shows? Or I guess it's American Idol. That inspires people. Lady Gaga.
Oh, and that better. Yeah, you're all right there. That's no problem.
That's a valid IFO identifier.
Yeah, we love Lady Gaga because she'd tell you right straight, I want your nasty. I want your jealousy. I want your disease. I want it all. I want your love. I want you and me can make a bad romance, and I don't want to be friends. I don't want to be friends, but we could have a bad romance if you could figure out what love is and get on with your process of coming into your place of power because you're all monsters anyway. Well, good. If you're going to be a monster, at least have fun at it. And once you come into that, then you go right straight on and go head to head. And you can go from zero to hero real fast in a mistake.
In the what?
As a mistake.
As a mistake, right. Okay.
Is something that Roddenberry introduced into the culture decades ago. Again, perhaps part of the Brookings gentle, you know, get them ready for the truth.
Okay, I think he's implying that Roddenberry was helping us get ready for the committee report in 2010. That's not recognizing that Roddenberry actually inspired the cell phone and not so extraterrestrial objects. Right here, rather than so he inspired the cell phone. Roddenberry did, and that was successful. But if NASA was inspired by Star Trek, they didn't do so well with it. They're just not producing their own TV show as photographs from the Hubble telescope.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
So what I did was in the Phobos piece was to compare the geology and the geomorphology of Phobos with the geomorphology, i.e. the shape, the form, the geometric form of Steins, which was this little asteroid that the Rosetta spacecraft flew by a few months ago. And I note that they're incredibly similar when you kind of realize what you're looking at.
Mm.
This, of course, opens up the doorway to how many objects in the solar system, which current science, current astronomy, the space agencies have dubbed as natural, in fact, are not natural. I mean, look, if we are air, if we are the descendants, if we are the genetic offspring of an ancient, incredibly advanced Type II Kardashevian civilization.
Yeah. Are we genetic offspring of the space Jews?
No, Bob.
Are we genetic offspring of whatever he thought he was talking about from me?
No, Bob.
Can you prove that? You can say no, but how would you show us that we should believe you?
Well,
we're not asking us to believe, but that we would accept.
Okay, we'll tell you. By using the words are the tale, by using his words of the vindicating and validating, it goes in and out. You can't have it both ways. And that's not being cheeky. That's saying if this super-duper ancient technology figured it all out and has let us know, then you ought to find some of them.
Okay, but how does that... You're seeing the fallacy, showing the fallacy of his argument, but can you come up with an argument or you wouldn't bother? You just say what is and don't feel the requirements.
Human creators can do behind anything, and if they want to figure this one out, they don't have to. The NSA won't have to work real hard to let this one drip out. that you can know that it gets a little bit too much sugar for a dime in this whole flow, but you can come into your place of power, and that's never a problem or an issue. But if you're going to do it from a place of power, not from a place of, well, this is all they let me find out, and I'm going to talk about this thing I don't know that I can't know because they won't let me know because they're more powerful than me. Then if that's the case, if you're the hope for civilization, then the world coming seems to be pretty much screwed.
So, yeah, you're saying if you can create your own power, are your own power, make up your own universe, then you wouldn't be worried about what other facts, other institutions state is reality.
Right.
In the state that you're left in.
Right.
Okay.
But once control the destiny of this entire solar system and built all kinds of amazing things out there that look now like natural satellites, but in fact were really spacecraft, spaceships, space platforms, artificial moons, you name it, then it makes sense that the space agencies would be probing under their cover stories these objects and bringing information back, and that part of the Brookings prescription is to release this data into the public data stream without comment, without an official confirmation as to what it really represents, so that the culture, in part people like us, can figure it out, put it together, put it on the web, get a lot of people paying attention to be part of this rising tide of consciousness, to where when they make the official announcement, people, instead of saying, oh my God, they say, we knew that all along.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're trying to go. They're trying to get us to say, oh, we knew that all along, and, you know, what's for dinner?
I think he's missing the point that people aren't too concerned about what they know.
Right. Making, or think they know.
Well, they don't stay with it. They don't, and they are not worrying about what they know. They're just enjoying what they can, most of it by default. But he thinks that if we know this fact about something, that would solve a lot of issues or tensions or strains that he thinks need to be removed. So he doesn't realize that his agenda is so puny and wouldn't work. Even if everybody did get into the same consciousness and understand the fact of whatever the Brookings said was, and we said, oh, we knew that. The important part is the attitude of, well, we knew that, and we don't even care what it is. Oh, but then we're going to send our kids to school. We've got to get them in good school so they can learn Wookiee book stuff. See, that's still there as a force in the culture. That's a bigger UFO. That's a bigger hypnotism. The fact that kids have to go to school and get books and get in good school, that's the real mind control idea.
To find out how incorrect history recorded or otherwise.
Okay, we almost finished this thing.
And so in one way also, everyone, if you will, who are involved in this kind of work, like you and like many other researchers out there, are in one way then also participatory in that story and in helping along in that.
I think so. People have asked me over and over again, oh, aren't you too scared? Aren't you worried about your life and all that? And I said, no.
The naive people that he has to ask their concerns about him, oh, you might get killed. The naive people don't realize, no, he is more the establishment than NASA is. Okay. You know, he's necessary for NASA to keep the virtual hologram going with his silly objections. So, but see, he doesn't tell the naive people this. He says he has no problem with that question. He doesn't expect to be killed.
Because I think we're part of the team, except they don't pay us. I'm expecting a very large check at the end of the road here.
Yeah, well,
we've been working very hard to get this on everybody's consciousness and get it in the right context. So when they make the announcement, people say, oh, that's interesting, but they don't freak out, which, of course, is what they're terrified about.
Yeah.
Look, the population freaked out a long time ago when television came in and computers, and the freak out, the social breakdown, if you want to make that a problem, is well beyond any releasing of some fact. There was another idea. Okay, consciousness. How would you define consciousness? Well, you wouldn't, but explain why you object to the word consciousness.
Well, because it's a degree of separation from your inner kingdom.
It limitates your potentials or what is already happening that you can't remember. It screws up your memory of what already is happening with you by putting it on one little string of letters.
Right.
Like what consciousness actually appear to represent? They might show a side shot of a skull and a brain and different parts of the memory lobes, but
bloody flux.
Yeah. Why would you limit yourself, your knower, to that situation? So don't believe that your knower is in your brain.
It's not.
Right. Very good. Okay. Next one. This is AT&T or Bellcom NASA fiber optics ritual calendar for space missions. Now, this will all be silly, but we might as well just see what surprising ideas we might be able to repeat.
Richard, there's another interesting aspect here as well in terms of how we potentially are on the road of rediscovering an ancient form of technology. I remember hearing another radio broadcast with you quite a few years ago now, when you talk a little bit about AT&T, Bell Corporation, their interest in the moon and actually our own fiber optics systems and things like that, telephone and everything. And it seems to me also that everyone is involved in this process of rediscovering an ancient technology without really realizing it. It can even be argued in terms of computers with all the...
maybe not what they mean by those words, but those words were... Ion is helping us remember ancient technologies?
We don't like remember. We like it if you could remember. But now he's not saying that it ever was. And if it was, they kept it as a secret from you. So how can they help you? How can one minute they can be eliminating the possibility because you're not ready, and then the next thing turn around and try to remind you that you indeed were powerful to know it the first time to remember it?
Right, and you're saying forget those concepts of loss. It's here now, and you can activate it very simply.
And without all the gobbledygook and the conspiracy.
Right.
And screwing with your subconscious.
Right.
Richard, there's another interesting aspect here as well in terms of how we potentially are on the road of rediscovering an ancient form of technology. I remember hearing another radio broadcast with you quite a few years ago now, when you talk a little bit about AT&T, Bell Corporation, their interest in the moon and actually our own... fiber optics systems and things like that, telephone and everything. And it seems to me also that we are everyone is involved in this process of rediscovering an ancient technology without really realizing it. It can even be argued in terms of computers with all the minerals and mica and what have you that are in our modern computers, that we're actually using these ancient things, if you will, and materials that have been potentially used in the past. Is there something you would like to say about that, and specifically about this AT&T and Bell connection and the moon? I think that's a fascinating area, Richard.
Well, if you take this model seriously, that the space agency, starting with NASA, went to the moon to basically try to find pieces of ancient technology to bring back and back engineer, the AT&T story kind of fits in, because AT&T, which is the American Telephone and Telegraph Company, formed as part of the Bell system, from Alexander Graham Bell and his, reported invention of the telephone here in the United States, a couple of centuries ago now. Somehow AT&T got into a position through a subsidiary of this vast telecommunications giant corporation to spin off a small company called Bellcom, or Bell Communications. And Bellcom in Washington got into an incredibly powerful position with NASA to actually be able to pick the landing sites for the Apollo astronauts to land on the moon. And in essence, one guy who turned out to be an Egyptian was in charge of that effort, and he essentially single-handedly picked all the landing sites.
Is that accurate, Ion, that the guy who set up the landing sites for these NASA missions was retrieved and represented ancient Egyptian wisdom?
Didn't say nothing about wisdom, Bob.
Well, ancient Egyptian technology.
Didn't say nothing about technology.
Well, something ancient. He said they were following ritual based on some ancient pattern.
Well, and it was the come sum you or come suck you or something that lines it all out, and that it's, so it must be coming back to those that Egypt was once my home and I was a slave, sin sick and loved it wrong, loved life did crave. It's just
okay. The guy
validation of the voluminous. Less than that for the human creators.
Okay. Did AT&T, what is it about AT&T that he's not going to find out that you could tell us?
Oh, okay. AT&T is nothing other than a spinoff because Bell South was, or the Bell Corporation, was a monopoly. They had complete control. And all these other different companies were spun off of the monopoly, the breaking of the monopoly. That'll go all the way into your Lucent technology, and they say, oh, it's all about the devil. Look, Bob, there's the devil. If that's it, it's Lucifer technology. Uh-huh. Well, then AT&T came because Bell South and Bell Labs and the Bell thing was a monopoly. So then now this one little tidbit of Bell Labs in Washington, D.C., and all the infrastructure, maybe that's the one that got the telegraph from Phobos back way back yonder so it'd have time to get to Mars and get back, and maybe that's the one that invented the printing press that was able to print all them documents that they won't let you see.
Yeah, it could have been that one.
It's as logical as anything else you've heard tonight.
Yeah. So, Bellcom then, Bell, the original, like McLuhan, he said the electric age is acoustic. Well, that's Bell. James Joyce did a lot of cunning on Bell's in Finnegan's Wake. So Bell is the...
It was a mistake.
How was it a mistake?
Alexander Graham Bell made a mistake, spilled some stuff, and he's about to set the damn place afire, and he started screaming, Watson, come here, I need your help. We're about to set the world, come in here, Watson, and pee, because the world's on fire. Well, he heard him, Watson heard him, and he couldn't hear him. I don't know, he's screaming real loud, but he heard something, that it was a mistake had been wrought. And so because of that less than place of not knowing what in the hell they was doing, they accidentally found the ancient Samaritan Hebrewoid technology in their place of less than-ness, and the next thing you know, a monopoly was wrought.
And that monopoly was just that people enjoyed using their senses on the telephone.
Mm-hmm. In communication.
Yeah, it's an enjoyment of the technology rather than who owned it, which was the real hypnosis and the real delight.
Yes, but we're glad that they stumbled on that mistake that couldn't happen. So they'd be well aware when the messages came back to RSVP for 2010, when the Phoebes was going to come and move in. Or maybe they'd have hooked up with the Lemurians and the lizard people could hear better than the less than humans, so the lizard people could get the radio frequencies from Phobos, and they could figure out, and they could tell the Russians all about it, so they could print them papers. Maybe that was better. Maybe so.
Well, this story about Watson and Bell, is that actually what happened, or?
Yeah, that's actually what happened.
Yeah.
And even and it hadn't changed your history about it yet, but give them a minute, they will.
Okay, so let's see what else he says here.
But again, that's only circumstantial evidence. We don't have a memo saying this, in fact, is what he was really doing. Now, let's flash forward to the film. If the astronauts were bringing this information, back from the moon and technology to be back engineered and fed into the modern terrestrial culture as a way of preparing that culture to receive full information as to its legacy, its history. In other words, you got to get everybody on the same page.
Look at that. Look at this meta. Oh, you have space. So let me say. Look at this metaphors. Getting on the same page. I mean, who uses pages anymore? Go ahead, Aya. What were you going to say?
Yeah, I got to get them all lined up, and we were going to scream, but bring back the Gutenbergs and let's print some, get some printing presses about it. And then we can typeset the work so we can get everybody caught up to snuff so they'll know what to wear to the great big alien party that's going to happen September, he says, because they have already done this thousands of years ago to line up this tete-a-tete so that somebody can have some proof that this was done in your future, because your past wouldn't allow you to have the technology to figure it out because they was hiding it from you, so that printed page, now we don't really have a memo about it. We did, but now we don't have a memo. And if you can get to this place and take everything that we said we had proof for, now we don't have no proof, but it is, because there's enough circumstantial subconscious information or unconscious information that can allow us to know that we don't know.
Yeah, so take, we're screaming to become the mobile type, make us the mobile type, squeeze us into the printing press.
Make us be on the same page so we can all know what we don't know together in unison.
Right, and as I was saying an hour ago about the literate bias of Richard Coughlin, you can't get more proof than that one. That little memo we got getting us on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
He's not aware of the assumptions, the conditioning of his own words.
Well, and that's what makes it so problematic so quickly, is because most of it you can't get there from now, and if you could, you can't, don't go and undo what how you got this far down the rabbit hole. You don't know how you got there, and you got no way to get back, and you're not sure who's going to let you know when it's okay. But drip by drip, by drop by drop, that's like the Niagara Falls. Slowly I turn, step by step. I don't know what it's all about. I don't know what's happening. But somebody's going to get a whipping, and a whipping near you one is going to get a whipping. I don't know which one. But when the memo comes, then we'll know. When we have first contact or next contact or last contact from the contact that we've already... Now, you know, this first contact's pretty interesting when we know everything about this spaceship that's a moon that's not. We know the inside, we know the outside, we know the streets, we know the monuments, we know we've X-rayed it, we've sent radio waves back to tell us everything about it, how clean their windows are, what kind of people they are. Well, there wasn't no people, but they have water in this atmosphere. We know everything there is to know about it, but we're waiting on first contact.
Is there water on Mars?
Good. Not, well, there is on Mars, but we're talking about the spaceship, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Is there water on Phobos?
It's not water. It must be ancient tea.
The golden shower.
The golden shower, it must be. Now, meanwhile, it's pretty cool on Phobos. Pretty chilly. Mars.
That's a fact.
It's pretty. You would certainly want to get your long-haired sable if you're going to go vacation in Mars. It's a little airish.
Well, if I go there through riff riding, parallel worlding, is it still cold?
Yeah, cold.
Yeah, because I'm going in my chemical body, so it'll register that.
So take your sable.
Okay, here we go.
You got to bring civilization up to a certain level to be ready to accept the truth when the truth's time arrives. You could look at Apollo in that sense, that a lot of the materials that were brought back were quietly put into the culture as part of commercialization, commercial technological democratization. And now, of course, we live in a totally different universe culturally than we did even in 1969. Mm. I mean, I have something like 12,000 fans and friends on Facebook. Well, Facebook wasn't even an idea when we went to the moon.
He's marveling about Facebook and how he can have millions of friends on his Facebook, but his main issue in terms of what he talks about is some ancient event back in 1973. Again,
you couldn't get there from the answer. Apparently, that was one drug, one toke over the line, sweet Jesus, that they let that slip out.
Right, and he's admitting that technology has changed the culture way more than any fact about whether Phobos was a spacecraft or not. I mean, he's proving my McCullen point. He's marveling at how the culture has changed. And he indicates the change by pointing to technology like Facebook. Let's see how he follows this further.
Yeah.
But in order for Facebook to exist, in order for the Internet to function, you had to have optical fiber technology and laser technology that would allow you to encode billions and billions of bytes of information and send it around the world at the speed of light, on light, and that could not be done with copper wires, and it had to be done with a technological breakthrough, i.e. an optical fiber-based internet, and that could only be done if you brought back the secret of how to make lossless optical fibers from the glass structures on the moon, and that was what AT&T was in charge of doing through their subsidiary of Bellcom when their Egyptian guy pointed out, we land here, here, and here, and did he have secret information from ancient Egyptian texts regarding where to land on the moon to bring back the right stuff. You see what I'm talking about?
Yes, indeed.
Okay,
that solves it right there. That solves it. Let's go back to when the smart ones was on the Earth and start using their logic. It seems to be much more progressive than what we're coming up with now.
Okay, so did this Egyptian guy determine the landing sites for...
No.
So that whatever he's talking about is not true. Okay.
Well, he doesn't know what he's talking about either, so it's all right.
What's all right?
That he doesn't know what he's talking about either.
Oh, that's necessary if you want to be a regular on a show. Because
yeah.
You keep coming up with crazy concepts that you don't really know anything about and you're providing new good words to fill in the airtime. But... He brought up another point about the moon flights and fiber optics and all that was brought back from the moon. But,
well, and the thing that gets crossways is now that he's got lasers that are limited only to the speed of light. Well, you hadn't helped anything. Because you're still slow.
Yeah, the speed of light is not correct, you say.
Right.
So
number one.
Did we get technology to lead the fiber optics from the moon or trips to the moon?
No, Bob. No.
I think.
Maybe it was that, you know what? What are we thinking about? Goodness gracious. Hang on. Everybody, that's where they had the can and the string hooked up to Phobos was that line that they could get the radio signal back on the laser line. So they had two cans and they could hear from Russia to the spaceship that's parked in the orbit of Mars so they could find out what kind of blueprints and means of egress they had on this defunct spaceship with an atmosphere and really, really, really cold water.
So this last soundbite really clinches that argument.
Pretty much.
Okay, so next one. Info leaked to entertainment industry. So now we're going to find out how all these great movies were made from what they found on the moon or on...
Made Aaron Spelling just rich.
I mean, I don't know how much time you have, you know, to look at sci-fi, as it were, but... some of these even could be, this type of information could be leaked out through the entertainment industry as well. If we look at a television series like Battlestar Galactica,
Heinick, funny you should say that, because that's exactly what the Brookings Report recommended.
Right.
That there be a concerted political effort at the level of media, television, film, radio, newspapers, etc., and fiction, that would prepare people for the reality of their own history. And I think that's exactly what we've been seeing in various television series and various films, like Star Wars. I mean, come on, Star Wars, if you really step aside, could in fact be a slightly metaphorically, you know, fictionalized version, based on the data we've now been acquiring, of our own history.
Ion, do you see Star Wars as a fictionalized version of our real history?
Well, it's a point of creation. Some human creator thought it, and they laid it out, and by default, many human creators have embraced it, and that's all that is. That's just the essence of creation. There's nothing metaphorical about human creators creating.
Yeah, so he should focus on other movies as also variations of our history.
The only reason he's got anything to talk about at all has been watching Torchwood on the BBC a little bit too much.
He has? Who has?
Yeah,
so
whoever it is talking about things that he doesn't know what he's referring to, that they have confirmed of the ratification of this particular document, of that conspiracy that was hidden from the anonymous few that were in charge, that we have documented proof that they might have had something to do with the esoteric dynamic that they're not letting you know anything about.
Yes, yeah, so he could emphasize the Honeymooners or Frank Zappa albums. Any kind of creation is relevant and a metaphor for our history. But then again, why not create rather than look for metaphors of our history of creation? So
how do you say that? How do you say that? If you can do it, do it. And if you can't do it, teach it.
Yeah, and teaching comes out of literacy. So more propaganda for the literate way of life is basically what Richard Hoagland is. That's all. And how's it working for us? It's not working for us because we don't want to remain illiterate.
And I think when all is said and done, and we ultimately all know in maybe a couple of years, that's going to turn out to be the truth. Well, that would be extraordinary because it means then that the producers and directors and writers like George Lucas and my old friend Gene Roddenberry, who created Star Trek, for which I named the Enterprise mission because that's the mission that we're on, to basically reveal that Star Trek is not fiction.
So our Rolling Stone albums or the punk rock albums are reality too.
And that, so it's all based on the White Album then?
Yes, and name a couple of porn stars or any medium. What's happening in right now, Avatar, 24 or Lost, J.J. Abrams' work, Fringe, metaphors for our history.
Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Reality. That all would come to a head if, in fact, the Brookings report has been followed and all of this cultural and media preparation in the form of fictional scenarios.
He thinks that all this great media creations and wealth is guided to getting us back on one book's page and having the correct page and the correct linear history. He's backwards in relation to the present. He's running backwards to get us to recognize the correct page, and he thinks all this entertainment is pointing towards that page.
No wonder they call it Bad Robot.
He's a bad robot, all right. I mean, J.J. Abrams realizes that. He makes fun of you at the end of each show. That if you're regarding this as this show as entertainment, then you're just a bad robot. It's the facts, ma'am. The facts are what's being presented right now on any TV show. The facts defined is what is made.
They work for Joe Friday. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
And the Untouchables. Okay.
Battlestar Galactica. Well, Battlestar Galactica basically said it, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, in its last episode of its final season.
The basic, final, all products of the idea that time ends at the end of the sentence with a period. They don't know it's the end of the period, the end of time, or the measure of literate chronology.
Time on Earth, there'll be no more. But we won't get that for a few more years.
Good point. It already happened.
That the human race came from an amalgam of ancient ancestors.
Did the human race come from an amalgam of ancient ancestors? I am.
We don't know what ancient ancestors are referenced.
Right, so the
better go back to your Clinton press and see what they said.
You mentioned Battlestar Galactica. Well, Battlestar Galactica basically said it, didn't it?
Mm, yeah.
You know, in its last episode of its final season,
sure
it basically said that the human race came from an amalgam of ancient ancestors from beyond the solar system, in this solar system, who left what we now see. So,
on the solar system, in the solar system, that lets us know what he means.
Lets us know what?
We don't have a clue, Bob. That's where we start.
Let us know what he needs.
From our solar system and the solar system, that lets you know what we mean. We can't even clean this up, Ed. There's not enough to clean. I mean, it's not enough to even notice it's nasty.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty and all that kind of stuff, but Lord suffering cats, what are you supposed to get from here?
That's right.
He is more of a trip.
Wow, this.
So everybody, just so you know, no matter how proficient at urination you become, there'll always be two drops that make it to your undergarment. No matter how thorough you are, there'll always be two drops that'll make it to your drawers. Just so you know, drop by drop, no matter what you do. Okay.
Okay, the final one is Russian Phobos craft destroyed.
Oh, thank goodness. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, thank you, thank you for this being the last one.
Oh, sorry. There's one more after that.
Well,
okay.
When the Russian launched those two, you know, unmanned satellite probes that you mentioned before, Phobos 1, Phobos 2, and one, I can't remember now if you said it, both were disappeared, were taken down, so to speak, in one way. Is this because, if this is a ship out there that we're talking about, could this be some kind of automatic defense thing, you know, on the ship that actually took them out because they came too close? What do you think happened?
Well, okay, that's an interesting speculation. I don't happen to buy it. I think it has a much more mundane explanation. I think when the Russians sent their Phobos mission, they were in the same position that we are and most of the people in the audience are, which is, oh my God, wouldn't it be incredible if this was true? But of course, we don't really think it's true. Then they got to Phobos with Phobos 2, and they found that it's true. So what did they have to do? They had to kill the mission publicly if they were going to keep the secret privately. So how do they do that? Well, they started spreading weird rumors that nobody in the mainstream press would ever in a million years believe by sending even astronauts. I believe it was Marina Popovich, who was one of the Russian cosmonauts, married to another cosmonauts who made trips around the world to various meetings, UFO, you know, conferences and whatever, where she basically extolled the idea, holding up some photographs, that the Russian, you know, Soviet Phobos 2 mission had been shot down by some kind of alien spacecraft. Well, what better way, Heinrich, to keep the secret? Because as soon as she attached that idea to the Russian mission, nobody at NBC, CBS, ABC, the BBC, you know, Swedish National Radio or Television, nobody for an instant would entertain in the mainstream that was in fact what had gone on. So it becomes, as Marshall McLuhan said very aptly many, many years ago,
My God, blasphemy.
Oh.
Such a limited literate person citing Marshall. I think Ed edited this. I think he stuck it as a joke on me.
I was just waiting until we got to this part.
Wow.
What do Bob and Richard Hoagland have in common?
Let's see what he said. You watch. What he's going to say, McLuhan said, will be ridiculous. Watch this.
The best secrets don't need, you know, concealment because they're They're basically imprisoned by people's incredulity to believe the astounding truth in and of themselves.
Okay, this is very, it is connected. That quote by McLuhan, which is, only puny secrets need protecting because the big discoveries are protected by public incredulity. That entered the counterculture of the 90s because Walter Boert got the quote from me, and he made it the end of his revised edition of Operation Mind Control. He made a big deal out of that quote. He loved that quote. So it circulated all over the place through Boert, or if anybody ever heard me say it on the radio the last 25 years. So it's interesting. Richard here doesn't have it clearly what the statement is pointing to because he garbles it, and I don't even know what he said that makes sense. It might move towards it, but he doesn't. He's pointing out how people are protected by public incredulity by their own limitations, but he doesn't emphasize that all the secrets that he's talking about, that he makes a career out of, are puny. So he drops the first half of it. So, Ed, isn't it?
That's why we started off with ipso facto.
Right. And so he's saying that the public is incredulous before his puny secrets. Well, no, the real point is the public is incredulous that he goes on with such puny secrets and the radio shows about it, and they don't understand, that's what the public's incredulous about, why is this kind of programming carries on and creates a big market? And unless you listen to my stuff, you won't know why. So it's all backwards and upside down what he's doing here with McLuhan. But it's ironic that I start off with that quote hours ago and use that point to disprove Richard all the way through. And then he cites it to prove himself. Hey, you get well. What? Go ahead.
How ironic!
Beg your pardon?
How ironic!
Very how ironic.
Ironic.
Yeah, I know. So, what did you want to say about that?
They're more ironic. It just gives you more validation, Bob. They're listening. They're listening. They're listening, and they're using these wordy words to clean up their own misses on various aisles of deception.
That's right. It's like Lenny Bloom and Mrs. Steele in Toronto. They keep using my stuff backwards to validate their own false premises that they claim were written in the Bible. I could get personally insulted about this, but I won't because I am not my point of view. Just someone has to just clean the stables with McLuhan, and I do it when given the opportunity. So this section here. I'd like to go back and just rehear that.
Okay, do it for posterity, Bob. Marshall wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, here we go.
Well, I think when Richard calls in for his reading with Ion, maybe Bob can set him straight on his McEwen quote.
Yes.
Oh, probably not. Probably not. Bob rarely throws his very best pearls before the swine.
Okay. I want to see how he leads into this McLuhan quote again.
Nobody for an instant would entertain in the mainstream that that was in fact what had gone on. So it becomes, as Marshall McLuhan said very aptly many, many years ago, the best secrets don't need, you know, concealment because they're basically imprisoned by people's incredulity to believe the astounding truth in and of themselves.
I like that. The best secrets.
And how many times have you ever heard Marshall McLuhan in a sentence say, and you know?
Yeah. Well, McLuhan explained back in the 60s why there would be more and more people talking like this. Mm. You know, the corruption of the literate rules. He had nothing against it, but he explained why Richard says you know a lot. Interrogatively.
No. You know. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know that thing. What was that thing that you know that thing? Marshall McLuhan talked about that thing, you know? Well, that's the same thing that they're hiding from you, is that thing you know. Damn, there you are again. You know, you think, you see. We have the documents, the memos are ready. They're ready to go out. You know which memos, those memos, you know, they're ready. Now, when we get those forms, then you can know what we know, that we think you know. It's not what we know. And then that was the reason Marshall McLuhan lived and why we included him marvelously in
it. Excellent. Okay, the last one's called Disinformation.
You don't mean it.
In terms of secret missions to Mars, secret operations of actually going there without our knowledge, there are various testimonials out there, people who we've had on the show and people who are upcoming on the show as well, people like Andrew Bashago, Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, the granddaughter of President Eisenhower over there in the States. Various claims about activities on Mars and them being involved in these missions. Do you have any comments on that at all?
Well, I'm extremely skeptical, and I will tell you why. Because this, to me, appears to be more of the same. You know, remember, I just discussed how Marina Popovich was sent on basically a political errand to go around the world and spread disinformation so nobody in the mainstream media would believe for an instant that anything unusual had been found by the Russian mission to Phobos back in 89. I think Bisaggio and Eisenhower and all of these names that have suddenly popped up are doing exactly the same thing. They're spreading disinformation. I mean, I could do an entire program taking apart what they're saying and showing how it doesn't square with the facts as we now know them, but I think it's part of a political stopgap, which is to keep, you know, the secret until officially it matches the timetable for official release, because too many people now, probably spurred on by activities such as ours, our investigation, have been raising questions in recent years regarding all kinds of things you're seeing on the spacecraft data. And the only way that you can stuff that genie back in the bottle is by putting people out there that make the most outrageous claims that nobody in their right mind is going to take seriously without really good evidence.
He'd be incredulous to be pointed out to him. If it was pointed out to him that his statements are outrageous claims, I think he would find that too big of a discovery for his brain to...
Oh, no, he's waiting on the document, on the memo.
That's right.
If he gets the memo, then it'll all be... Everybody will be happy when we get to the end.
Yeah, the great puny secret in memo form.
The memo.
And therefore, you insulate and isolate the bulk of the public from believing and the bulk of the mainstream media from following or reporting on any of this until it is time. I think it's a very sophisticated PSYOPs program, and I think it's designed to keep things on their timetable and not allow, shall we say, unofficial leaks to be taken seriously before it is the appropriate time.
Just think of all those people tweeting their unofficial leaks, their unofficial golden showers.
Hey, Bob, how far would it be to send him a copy of your Allow series?
Would it just
turn out church, or would it just be more than could be consumable? I mean, it just...
Well, as long as he doesn't hear this, if he hears this show, he's going to have to confront the fact that he's been in the world of puny secrets, and he'll be incredulous before what he hears here. He won't believe it. He'll be incredulous. He'll just think, well, this is a bunch of nonsense. He won't get it.
Yeah, imagine that. We could see his ineffable response.
Ineffable.
You know.
You know, Ed?
This is the memo he's been waiting for.
Wow. This is a memo. This is from Bob, head of the Illuminati Secret Council, and finally doing it in 2010, like he predicted.
Yeah, we're going to turn it out. Now, everybody that got run out of church, but the reason they run out of church is because they didn't get the memo.
Remember, I'm known for the memo to Prince Charles and the booklet for the album about meteorology. So, Richard, give us a call at 808-633-4036, and we'll tell you how we came to this ascended position of approving your point that we'd reveal the puny secrets in 2010.
Now we'll send you a memo.
A memo that they're available, and then the prize for doing that is a free access to our Relax and Allow series.
Yay. Oh, no. Relax won't be necessary. Just allow.
Just allow, okay.
And we love you all, everyone, and we love you whether you get the memo or not.
And I appreciate Richard's contribution to a thriving economy.
Yes, indeed. And just keep typing. Everything will be all right. We promise.
Keep talking to Mopley.
We have previewed the memo. Everything's going to be all right. That's all good.
Thanks. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, gentlemen.